Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go, and the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal with 23 minutes to go. But nobody asked me how I feel. I got 22 minutes to go. Well, I sent for the governor and the whole darn bunch with 21 minutes.
Welcome to Combo Podcast 6.2, where we talk about pretzel versus cracker, and also pizza versus cheddar. I myself am a cheddar man because the pizza stuff is just kind of weird. I don't like that very much. But we'll talk about that. We got about an hour of combos discussion coming up, so settle in and get ready.
With 18 minutes to go. Now here comes a preacher for to save my soul with 13 minutes to go. And he's talking about burning, but I'm so cold. 12 more minutes to go. Well, they're testing the trap and it chills my spine. 11 more minutes to go. And the trap and the rope, all they work just fine. 10 more minutes to go.
All right, so, yeah, that happened.
At least the last interception didn't count.
I had actually, I set a new record for the quickest I had left a Michigan game, besting the 2007 Oregon game.
That is an accomplishment. Although road game definitely factors in there just for, you know, wanting to get home.
Yeah. Yeah, but we left with like 10:45 on the clock in the fourth quarter. So
yeah, that was about the time that I stopped paying attention entirely and just kind of tuned out.
Yeah, so man, that lemon is just lingering. It's I wish I didn't have to do that for a lot of reasons. So that wasn't the most emasculating game I've ever experienced. Like, I think last year's Michigan State game was so much worse. If you look at the box score, they actually outgained them.
Yeah. I mean, the box score may be the strangest thing I've seen in a long time, just in terms of having something not at all represent how the game felt. But
yeah, that is like a quintessential, like, life on the margins, Matt Hinton box score right there.
Yeah, I'm expecting Bill Connolly to address this game in detail at some point this week, just because it'll be interesting to pore over what happened.
Because I think everybody was watching State, and then they were watching the Ohio State game. So nobody actually watched our game. So everybody who has to cover this is going to look at the box score and just think, what the hell?
Which, in fairness, is exactly what we thought while watching the game. So
so
far off.
But yeah, no, this like the 2007 Oregon game was much worse in terms of pure emasculation. Like in terms of, we're just going for like,
shoot, even last year's Nebraska game was up there.
No, I'm talking about just sheer, your balls shrivel up into your body. You feel like you have no secondary sexual characteristics.
There were some of those Ohio State games during the Rich Rod era that I've just all kind of lumped together that were incredibly emasculating.
The 2008.
But that one most especially.
Yeah, like the 42-7 one where Brandon Miner looked like the only guy who was actually playing college football instead of high school football.
Yes, that was rough.
Yeah, but I still think last year's Michigan State game.
I think that takes the cake.
Yeah, just for pure, we cannot do anything. We're never – oh.
And to have it happen against Michigan State.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the Nebraska game where Bellamy came in, but that's a different – that's just kind of like
– That one you just chalked up to like, well, we didn't have somebody behind Denard who wasn't playing receiver, and that – turned out poorly. There was at least like a good reason for that.
Yeah. So never let it be said that we don't look on the bright side.
Yeah. It's not the worst one.
This was not the most emasculating game in the last year.
Hooray.
Oh, God. I guess I should. Big Ten.
Somebody asked how many times Big Ten would be yelled during this podcast.
We got an early start here. Big Ten.
Setting the over under at 8.
Okay. So. This section is – we're not even going to talk about the offense. We're going to talk about holistic program things. And the most holistic thing right now is that Michigan is 3-7 in its last 10 games with wins over Appalachian State, Northwestern in triple overtime thanks to the only fire drill field goal that's ever gone in, and then Indiana. So
that's rough to hear said out loud.
Right. And
that's a brutal stat.
And two of the most emasculating games we've ever experienced are also in that. So this was a game changer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it completely changed the outlook for this season and potentially Brady Hoke's coaching tenure.
Yeah. I mean, you go into the season and you think if the team performs approximately how you would expect, you know, this isn't a great team. It's like a 9-3 team. It's an 8-4 team. And then Brady comes back because that seems to be the thing that makes the most sense. 31-0 to Notre Dame. That brings his fire.
A Notre Dame team with serious depth issues and...
And missing like six players, because Collinsworth was out as well. And they just completely obliterate Michigan, although not in the box score for some reason. But that's now I think you have to think that his firing is on the table if things continue to go this poorly.
Yeah, I mean, this is, in terms of the three road games against rivalry teams, this certainly appeared to be the most winnable, even with Ohio State looking the way they do. And especially with all the suspensions, I mean, it's just shocking that Michigan was not able to score a single point in this game.
Yeah, well, at least people on Twitter won't keep talking about the frickin' shutout streak. I'm so sick of that. Like, they're sad at it, and I'm like, guys.
I mean, I was actually very glad that they did not go for a save face field goal at the very end, because what was that going to do? And if Weil missed it, then good God.
And then, like, you know, I didn't see this live because I had missed it, but a lot of people have talked about it on Twitter, and if there are accounts are correct, then this reminds me of a previous incident in Michigan sports where Devin Gardner throws the ball and takes what people are saying is a pretty vicious, very, very late MSU against Nard style late hit.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the team does nothing except walk off the field. And that reminds me of the hockey team from 2 years ago. And they've just lost to Bowling Green State. There's like 3 minutes left in the game. Down 5-1, and they got their first shot of the third period 15 minutes in. The only reason I was still in the arena was to see when they would get that first shot. And their alternate captain, Mac Bennett, takes a dirty, dirty hit to his legs, gets knocked out for a month, and the rest of the team just skates away. And, you know, that was one of the few times I've actually, like, lost it in terms of screaming at the players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'll yell at a ref. I'll yell at a coach.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of yelled about not targeting Funches deep until three quarters had gone, and then I tweeted about it. But, you know, I don't, players usually are pretty sacrosanct. But in that case, I let them have it. And since it's Yost, I know they could hear me. And they deserved it. But that was just emblematic of the fact that, I mean, you know, Bray talks about toughness every day, and his teams are the opposite of tough. And, like, I don't care if you get suspended for a game, but you can't let that happen.
Especially when that game is against Miami.
And you're done. I mean, you're not winning that game. So if someone takes a cheap shot at your quarterback, you have to – there's got to be some pushing. There's got to be some shoving. You know, that's a situation where it's like you have to have some pride.
Yeah, and it's disconcerting, especially for a team where they've talked all offseason about how they, you know, at least strongly hinted at the fact that they had serious leadership issues last year in a divided locker room, how everything was sunshine and rainbows now, and everybody's getting along fine, and they've got leaders.
Yeah,
and then,
how can we find a way to blame this on Taylor Lewan? I mean.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. I bet Taylor Lewan would have shoved that guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think Taylor Lewan would have done some stuff to that guy. Just a completely limp performance, a disaster. Well, I guess the run D was really good.
The run D was good.
But it
didn't really matter.
You know, they managed to look more poorly coached than a team that took a timeout on their first offensive snap and ran out of timeouts in the first quarter.
Yes.
That takes something. I mean, yeah, this is, you know, if this is the way the state game goes, and I mean, state eventually lost to Oregon because that's what you're going to do against Oregon. But
have we applied for credential for state yet? Because I would like to request that I do not cover that game in person again.
I don't think we have, so that is a possibility. And then if they go to Ohio State, and I mean, even if that finishes up a 9-3 season, if they get like just whacked by two of the rivals and then they lose to Ohio State for the nth consecutive time, I don't know. I mean, that might be a case where we see a change. And I mean, a lot of people are on the fire Brandon
bandwagon because he can't be allowed to make this decision. Of course, I'm there. I've been there for years. But
yes, mostly for non-football reasons until recently.
Well, he's just
all reasons.
Just everything. But this, I mean, I said, call it a game changer. It's what it is. Like, this is now a completely different situation than it was 24 hours ago. And they can bounce back for this. I mean, Lloyd Carr had a real knack for getting obliterated at some point in a dispiriting fashion and then pulling his team together and then having an acceptable season afterwards.
The 2007 season, you can look back to the post-Oregon bounce back.
But here, we have never seen this from Hoke. Hoke's track record is one good MAC season, and then he had Ryan Lindley and some NFL. And Ronnie Hillman and some NFL wide receivers who he didn't recruit at San Diego State, and they have an 8-4 season, and that's like, then he has the horseshoe up his ass 11-2 season where Denard pulls his ass out of the fire after they try to make him a under center quarterback. So not a whole lot of meat on this resume that would suggest that a bounce back is possible here.
No, I mean, basically what we're leaning on at that point is, he's been recruiting well, and that only goes so far as,
he has been recruiting,
Texas and Miami and Florida and many other programs have learned that you can recruit just about as well as you want, but if you don't have the right head man in there, it doesn't always mean everything.
Yeah. So, and I'm torn on Hoke.
Yeah, I'm not really advocating a firing yet, I don't think. It seems a little...
I just mean as a dude. You know, like everybody says he's the best dude in the world, but he's awful to the press. And he is. Contemptuous to fans. And, the whole Gibbons thing is just... And it's just a cloud that hangs over every personal evaluation you have to have of the guy. Say what you will about Rich Rodriguez, but he never did that.
Yeah.
I want him to succeed because I'm sick of UFRing this crap. But
it'd be nice when people are happy on the blog.
Yes, remember that. But if he goes, I'm not going to like I was sympathetic to Rich Rodriguez. I wrote a thing about him right before the season because I had to do it. I don't think I'm going to be particularly sympathetic to Brady Hoke. Partially because of the circumstances surrounding his hiring, where he was the only acceptable option. And I know that's not his fault, but I would hope that after this, if things looks like the way they might go, that the program would finally look at itself as a problem.
Yeah, that feeding back into this Michigan thing is not helping anything.
How much evidence do you need?
Do we want to pick through the Lloyd Carr coaching tree?
Scott Loeffler just beat Ohio State.
Hey,
there's your next head coach.
Otherwise, the tree looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. But
I think even with Scott Loeffler, looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree because there was one ornament on it, a very sad ornament, and that is Scott Loeffler. crap! I guess we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the offense. It's just so pointless. What is? All right. So Nussmeier's honeymoon is over.
Officially,
over because, they have Cody Riggs, who's 5'9", checking Devin Funchess. It takes them three fucking quarters to try a deep ball to him. Surprise, it's complete for 33 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gardner screws it up afterwards. But, what are you doing? Like, have you seen Funchess? Have you seen the height of the Notre Dame quarterbacks? Have you seen your offensive line? Go throw it downfield. And see what happens, and maybe something good will happen. And then that didn't happen. I like the overall structure of what he was trying to do.
There were some nice things. I thought his usage of Norfleet was good,
there were a couple of
that kind of went away.
There were a couple of weird checks where they threw one of those long handoffs to
They threw him to Chesson. That Chesson got blown up real hard because they were ready for it. Well, and they got lined up right over him.
The guy was like lined up 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. It's like, what do you think?
And it's not like a bubble screen where he's moving or anything. That was just a stop screen. He's, you know.
It's not even a screen because there's no one blocking for him. But
yeah, that seemed like a strange check.
But overall, I mean, they were mostly shotgun. They were mostly three wide. And I look at the rushing numbers. And I mean, so I'm in the end zone at this game, so my perspective is a lot different than it usually is. But the running game didn't feel as bad as the statistics say that it was.
No, it seemed like it was getting movement. But then you look at the numbers, and Derek Green has 13 carries for 25 yards, and that's bad.
Yeah, but I thought they did what they probably had to do if they were going to move the ball. So at least there's that, you know.
Yeah, it just seemed like it's weird to complain about this after Borges, but it seemed like they needed to take more shots downfield, and especially once they fell behind, it was just
there's a difference between, you know, never throwing it downfield and then doing what Borges does.
Yes, there's a nice in between zone there,
and also when you've got a guy like Funchess, you just need to be seeing what happens because the upside of that is so immense. And he
was catching just about everything, and he had one drop on a play that was pretty well defended where that almost could have been filed a pass breakup.
I think it looked like it was interference-ish to me. I mean, the guy seemed like a little early.
On TV, it looked relatively clean.
Yeah.
At least something that you know, Notre Dame fans would have been up in arms if that got called, and you can interpret that how you will, I guess. But, I mean, other than that one play where he caught – where he didn't catch a pretty low pass that was difficult to haul in. He was catching everything. Why not just put it up there?
Yeah. Completely inexplicable. They did a lot of stuff in Norfleet. He was actually probably their most prominent player in the first half.
Even lined him up in the backfield and got a nice little carry out of that. That was nice.
That's one of the, I mean, if you're a zone team, like, it seems like he could be kind of like a Jacquizz Ryders where he's small, but he finds those cracks.
And could sometimes just burst off the edge when, I mean, that's kind of what he did on his carry.
And people were complaining about the offensive line not giving Gardner protection. It didn't really feel like that was a problem. It felt like Gardner couldn't find people downfield. It felt like he couldn't interpret what was going on and get in a rhythm. And, yeah, he had to move around a little bit. But
that's pretty standard. I mean,
as
an offensive tackle, you're taught if you're getting at all beat around the edge, just try to push the guy past the quarterback. And there was a lot of that. That's not necessarily pressure. That just means the pocket moved up a tiny bit. And the quarterback should be able to handle
it. I mean, there were a couple instances where they busted super hard and Sheldon Day was just let go.
Yeah, that was a problem.
those were bad.
You should block that guy.
But overall, I thought the offensive line seemed to do about as well as you could expect. Like, people were complaining about it online on Twitter. And I was like, of all the things to complain about in this game, I didn't think that was one of them.
Yeah, I thought they held up okay. It just seemed like nothing opened up downfield.
And then Gardner, I mean, four turnovers. I mean, how many of those were meaningful given the fact that the first one came when they were already down 21-0?
The fumble was bad.
The fumble was super bad. I mean, because he's got Chesson screamingly open right in front of his face, and he's like, nope. This is always a problem with him. And there was going to be maybe a game or two where that really bit Michigan. I guess you could call this one of them, although
we're in a hole so early. Yeah. It's tough to say.
And then the thing in the third quarter that was just completely enraging was the fact that they're down three touchdowns. They have the ball, and on consecutive snaps with the clock running, the ball gets hiked with 4 seconds left game clock.
Yeah, they were breaking a lot of huddles with 10 to 12 seconds left where they're trotting out there.
Yeah.
It felt very
Borges.
Yeah.
And so now it's not a Borges thing. It's a Hoke thing where just tempo is not even considered.
And that is so disappointing after all the practice talk. It's really tough to even put it in words.
I mean, it's just there are teams that are comfortable going fast, and then there's Michigan. And as long as Brady Hoke is here, it's going to be, and then there's Michigan. Because even in situations where it's very clear – you should be going faster. Michigan is still just a tortoise of a team.
Can hang our hats on the 4-minute drill and the pro style punt.
Oh God! Don't even get me on. Like, they fumble a ball and
nobody's there.
Nobody's there. Just and then this is going to get back into Brady. But this was like the major warning sign to me when I had Hako ask him about why he didn't use a spread punt, and his response was, we just don't. He's never thought about it. This is the way football works. And even if like 90% of the rest of the country is using this spread punt formation, which is statistically proven to be massively effective, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, punt returns as a whole have dropped.
Plummeted.
Just off the map compared to where they used to be, because that innovation was quite successful.
To the point where they probably, I'd prefer it if they would just put in the NFL rules, but oh well. So, and then he's just still doing it. Like, he has, I guess, changed his offense, but not voluntarily. I mean,
I don't think there was much of a choice after last year.
And he's just stuck in this vision of football that is rapidly aging. And that sucks. You know, I feel like we haven't said very much, but is there much to say? I thought Chesson looked pretty good. I'm surprised they haven't tried to throw to Darbo.
Yeah, I mean, Chesson, all three of his catches came on three consecutive plays.
Yeah. Looked pretty good on those plays.
He did. And, you know,
there were a couple of like gaping holes that I thought Derek Green
missed.
Ostentatiously cut away from.
Yeah, there was one particular inside zone in Michigan's own end where there was
a cutback. Yeah, it was just like
huge cutback lane.
No, I'm going to run into these dudes because I like doing that.
And then I believe Davion Smith got the next drive. I think the coaches were like, we're going to talk to you about this.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should talk about the defense now. So defense was shockingly great against the run. That Notre Dame acquires a total of 54 yards, 1.7 a carry. There's like a team one in there, and Golson got sacked a couple times.
There's one 16-yard sack for Michigan.
16-yard sack. So that's not quite the whole story, but it's very close to the whole story.
And holding them well below 3 yards a carry even.
Yeah, and like, you know, their tailbacks did virtually nothing, and that was good. Like, I thought – you know, Willie Henry had a game. Glasgow held up pretty well.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, Frank Clark didn't have as much impact as I wanted to, but, you know, that pushback and spin move he was getting on pass plays was effective. It's just that
Golson was getting the ball out so fast.
And he's very escapable.
Yes,
and
that too.
He's terrific on the run. So, there was one 3rd and 12 way after the game was over. I think this was probably when they were driving for their fourth touchdown, where, you know, he gets flushed. There's a guy in tight coverage on the sideline. He just delivers a rope about 20 yards downfield. And I was like, all right, well.
he's really come a long way in 2 years.
Yeah. And I mean,
dude is very good.
That's the thing about, you know, early season football is that you think about things, but you really don't know. This is a stupid game full of stupid things that change drastically. And, you know, Everett Golson was a guy who had some hype as a freshman, but never really performed. And then he has a year off and comes back and lights up Rice. But if you look at that Rice game, it was mostly a matter of throwing to wide open guys with no safety help.
Yeah,
which I guess was a lot of help for this game, but you just don't know what to expect from the guy. And then even though he looked super good, he had 6.5 yards an attempt,
which is not spectacular.
No, that's thoroughly mediocre.
Yeah,
I mean, they had under 300 yards of offense for this entire game.
Yeah, I mean,
how does that happen?
I don't know. It's bizarre. I mean, it just seemed like early on they were getting tons of inside leverage on Michigan's corners,
yeah,
which was brutal to watch because it was just easy pickings for the most part. And
so
then,
yeah, we should.
And then they just kind of sat on that for a while.
So the man-to-man aggressive defense was a complete disaster.
And yeah, I mean, we should note that Ray Taylor gets hurt early in this game. Jabril Peppers sits out. And I now mean, I know they've talked about the defensive back depth all spring and how these guys are supposed to be starter quality.
Yeah. I'll give you that they picked on Hollowell quite a bit, and that worked well for them. And that was not having Peppers was a problem that I think
And that limits – I mean, Hollowell also had a blitz come in off the corner where it just – it would never had any hope of landing. And with Jabril Peppers, that does change the outlook of the way the defense goes.
You know, granted, but Blake Countess was ruthlessly exposed.
He was. Because Notre Dame's receivers were not even that impressive. They were not getting tons of separation against Rice's corners.
They did against Countess. And in one particular moment, I was just like, what is going on? That was the 4th-and-3 where the guy gets – an inside release on a slant on 4th-and-3.
Which is really the one thing you can't let happen.
And Countess is yards away from this guy with no prayer. He immediately gets pulled for Channing Stribling. Channing Stribling does the same thing on the next play. And I was just like, nah. And this is when they scored their third touchdown to really put it away. And it was just alarming. And, you know, you think Countess is this guy who had 6 interceptions last year. He's a third-year returning starter. He's a senior. He should be able to play at a high level. And, I mean, I go into these season previews expecting that the things that we have already seen mean anything whatsoever, you know? And then this happens, and you're just like, that is some of the worst cornerback play I've ever seen. And then Countess, the one time he does set up inside leverage, Will Fuller just runs by him for a fade that's open by 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And
he totally missed his jam on that play.
It was pathetic.
Do anything to alter the route.
And, you know, I'm not saying that Countess is pathetic. I'm saying that his performance in this game was pathetic. And that goes back, I think, to the decision that Michigan made to make Roy Manning their cornerbacks coach.
Yeah, you have a linebacker coaching corners.
A linebacker coaching corners who's never coached corners before. He's coached linebackers, he coached defensive line, he's coached running backs. He's never coached corners a day in his life. And Michigan thinks that putting this guy at some clinic to like learn how to coach corners in an offseason is going to work. And then they go to a defense that the highest priority in this defense is having well-coached corners who know what to do and can do it on an island. And in the first game where that gets tested, it's obliterated.
And it's not like this is a defensive coaching staff where like the defensive coordinator is a defensive back specialist. Greg Madison is a lineman and linebackers guy. Brady Hoke, the head coach, is an interior defensive line guy for the most part.
I mean, when they made all these moves, it was just like deck chairs on the Titanic where, you know, they move Smith to defensive line. They move Madison to linebacker and they split up the secondary. And it's just like, you know, if these guys weren't performing before, you need to go find someone else. You don't need to go like put someone in a position that they haven't coached in years or ever and just paper over whatever differences that you have.
I mean, honestly, based on the available evidence with Manning, it seems like they were trying to find him a spot that would work so that they could keep his recruiting acumen on the coaching staff.
Well, Fred Jackson
owns that spot right now.
Well, I mean,
he's in the one spot where you can do that.
He could be a running backs coach, and then Fred Jackson could go have a nice retirement and stop bringing Drake Johnson and Thomas Rawls and et cetera. I mean, every guy he makes a call on that's not a hyped guy that somebody else recruits is a total bust. Yep. I mean, his recruiting acumen in state is probably at least equally offset by his inability to identify talent.
So, yeah, and I'm guessing that's overblown considering in-state recruiting should not be that difficult for the University of Michigan.
Exactly. So the whole thing with just moving everybody around was, I mean, I was uneasy about it at the time and people give me stick for it. And I'm just like, dude, this is not good leadership. How about that? I mean, because if you have a tough decision to make about how you need to fire a guy, then you need to fire a guy. And Brady doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, he had Mark Smith as his defensive coordinator at Ball State for a ton of just completely terrible defenses. And he demotes the guy to linebackers coach, but he keeps him on. Like
there's a certain point at which loyalty is no longer a positive trait. And Brady Hoke, at the very least, straddles that line.
And so we end up with a cornerbacks coach who has no idea what he's doing. Great recruiter.
Hell of a recruiter.
Like to keep him on the staff.
Yes.
But in a place where he is actually familiar with the concepts and principles.
I'd let him coach linebackers or find him a recruiting coordinator spot or something.
So, I mean, it backfired. Everybody wanted this defense and we got it. And I mean, I guess it mostly backfired. Look at the numbers.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's the numbers tell a different story, and you know, they should get better at it as the season goes on. I would expect.
I mean,
it is still a relatively young defense, despite you know the fact that Hoke has been here now for 4 years.
Yeah, and like Lewis had an interesting game because
he did
his like the first drive he got in on, he had two pass interference calls that I thought were legit, but the first one was pure panic.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, he had the guy in perfect position. He pinned him against the sideline.
There's no way that guy makes a catch.
A wayward throw, and then he just shoves him. And it was like, well, you did everything except the end part really well.
Right. I mean, he has to know that he's on the sideline, so that guy is outside of the sideline. And if he just lets the guy go, everybody gives him a brownie.
Yeah, that's a play where you can just put your hands up.
And just be like, I already won this route.
Yeah.
But he panics, and then, you know, he...
The one of the end zone was both a less obvious pass interference. I actually thought it was pretty questionable because the receiver was getting handsy as well. And it was actually a really darn good recovery to knock the ball away.
Yeah,
at the very least, he saved a touchdown.
Just that distance.
The fact that he needs to close that at the end is a problem. I mean, that was something that popped up for him in high school, too, where he
but after that,
rely on his recovery speed.
You know, he really recovered from a very shaky opening drive, and that's like his first real playing time as a big time guy against a big time team. And he was pretty good after that.
Had a really nice pass breakup over the middle where he used that recovery speed for good.
Clutch third and seven breakup, and it seemed like for the rest of the game, Notre Dame was just like, "We're going to go at Countess," and it was like, "That's bad."
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
That's bad.
I mean, it looks like Ray Taylor is the best corner on the team right now.
Yeah,
and
well,
he got hurt pretty early.
I mean, that's true, but
and that's basing it on like he's been less exposed than Countess so far this season. But he also didn't have to play against Notre Dame very much because he got hurt.
I'm not hearing any injury stuff though, because I mean, obviously Notre Dame is. I mean, they're down their top corner. They're down their top safety.
Oh yeah, no, I'm more just saying in terms of the pecking order of Michigan's corners, how this affected them against Notre Dame.
But you know, I thought the defensive line
slow start with the pass rush.
Start with the pass rush, but. I mean, a lot of that was Golson playing well, and he was harried. You know, they didn't get as much rush as I wanted to, but I thought that was acceptable. And then they were just
and Clark was showing some good one-on-one stuff where he was beating guys.
He was, and then Michigan,
including on the touchdown fade, where I mean, if that route gets held up at any point whatsoever, that's a sack for Frank Clark.
And it's tough for guys to get sacks when people are immediately open on slants. So.
I did think there was improvement in the inside linebackers, which was nice to see. First of all, seeing Ryan and Bolden.
They missed a lot of tackles, I thought.
They missed some. First of all, you got to look at Notre Dame's rushing numbers and think that they were doing a lot of things right, especially since Greg Bryant is a tough dude to tackle.
It could have been. I thought it was better, but I thought it could have been even better because I thought the defensive line set them up for TFLs that would turn into like 2 yard gains.
That's fair. I still think that this was a step up from the Appalachian State game, just in terms of they were at least there to make tackles most of the time. And, I mean, it shows up in the numbers. They limited the running game to practically nothing.
Yeah, long of six for all three of their tailbacks.
Yeah, so, I think most of that was probably the defensive line playing quite well, but there was one play where Bolden, I mean, when Notre Dame ran out of timeouts and on one drive in the first half allowed the clock to wind down close to the close to zero.
Mm.
Bolden recognized this and just went kamikaze at a guard and just totally blew up the play, except this was one where Ryan probably should have been flowing in behind him and there just wasn't somebody there to finish it off. But it's still, I think the play only went for a couple of yards. It should have been a tackle for loss. But,
it was a
heads-up play by him. It was an aggressive play by him, which is something we haven't necessarily seen out of him before. And he blew the hell up out of a guard.
Yeah, so... other than the complete debacle at cornerback, they did okay. They did okay to well.
Yeah.
Other than the complete debacle at cornerback caused by nonsensical coach shuffling and, I guess, some injuries, but mostly nonsensical coach shuffling. So, how are we doing here? We good?
Having fun.
Just out here having some fun. just out here playing, having fun. Oh God, let's talk to Jamie for some reason.
friendships. Nice day for a moon. The forecast is good. The kids are melting in the doorway. Keep the gang together.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing all right, guys, all things considered.
Because Indiana had a bye week.
Yeah, that was, I think, probably one of the top three Big Ten results of the weekend, Indiana not playing and not losing.
It certainly was. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're headed to the Big Ten championship game. Actually, no, Michigan State is.
No, probably not.
So this was the most Big Ten week of, I think,
ever?
The history of the conference.
Yeah.
I think ever.
Yeah.
Just humiliations all around. Game. Like Michigan State lost by 20 points, and everybody's like, that Michigan State game, they were actually pretty good.
Yeah, they were competitive against Oregon
for
some of it.
And
they gave up 46 points, lost by 19, and you can make a case that, you know, for real, that was one of the top three, if not better, results of the Big Ten.
I agree with that take.
It might have been the best performance of the Big Ten yesterday.
I'm actually more confident in the fact that Michigan State will win the division.
And the entire conference, let's be real. The Big Ten West is, my goodness, pathetic.
So it started out pathetic. It continued to be pathetic, and then it got...
Can I just read off some of the early game
pathetic
scores here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Man,
go
was it pathetic. So Illinois comeback win over Western Kentucky, 42-34. Congratulations, Illinois. Nebraska pulls out a 31-24 win over McNeese State when Amir Abdullah takes a short pass and runs a long way.
Yeah. Let's talk about McNeese State for a second. They're the Cowboys. That is the biggest missed opportunity for a nickname in Division One, because they are still Division One.
They are.
They could be the Airboats. They could be the Beignets. They could be all kinds of different awesome things, and then they're the Cowboys. There are no Cowboys in Louisiana.
And far too many teams pick their names based on like the NCAA team name generator. That's just not at all good.
I usually just call them the Fighting Joe Dumars whenever I have to refer to them, which is like once or twice a year.
That's the only way that I know them, really, growing up as a Pistons fan.
The Gumbo?
The Gumbo would work. Anything would be more interesting than Cowboys.
Wyoming Cowboys, I get.
Yeah, you're in Wyoming. Yeah. That fits.
That's pretty much what everybody is in Wyoming, I imagine, a cowboy. But anyway, let's move on. Big Ten.
Other Big Ten nude scores. Penn State eventually pulling away from Akron to win 21-3 in a game that was just absolutely brutal to watch.
Ugly game.
Christian Hackenberg is just kind of going solo this season.
Mm-hmm.
Central Michigan wallops Purdue 38-17.
Hilariously. Thomas Rawls just needed a real offensive line. That was the only...
that was the problem.
That was the problem.
Or they just needed to play Purdue every week. Let's see.
He owns Purdue. He had a couple touchdowns with Michigan against Purdue in his career, so he's always happy to see them in the building.
The Purdue.
I think everybody is.
Yeah.
Rutgers takes down Howard 38-25 in one of the oddly more impressive noon game showings by a Big Ten team.
13-point win over an HBCU.
and then three more. Minnesota beat Middle Tennessee State in a game where they actually had a big lead.
Yeah.
Wisconsin held a 2-0 lead for the entire first quarter against Western Illinois when Western Illinois' kickoff returner decided to wander out of the end zone and then take it back in and kneel a ball down, which was hilarious.
Wait, that's how that happened?
That's how that happened. I mean, he sort of muffed the kickoff and then grabbed it at the one and then took a very sneaky step back into the end zone and was caught.
It stayed 2-0 well into the second quarter, too. It was bizarre to see.
It did, and then it ended up 37-3 because Wisconsin remembered that they are far more talented. Northern Illinois takes down Northwestern 23-15.
And nobody was even surprised.
Not at all. No, it's just a sad, sad scene. Trevor Siemian didn't even play that poorly, but Northwestern rushed for 1.9 yards a carry against Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
Maybe Venrick Mark was important.
Potentially.
They had like 26.1 yards per drive. They were they couldn't go anywhere yesterday.
So we don't play like any of those teams.
Northwestern, that's looking like a win.
That's good.
Might be, you know.
We tried Illinois.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
they like pulled it out of their butt against like what, Western Illinois?
Western Kentucky.
Oh, we did mention them, yeah. Hilltoppers.
Yeah.
Willie Taggart.
The game you didn't mention, Ace, was Maryland won like 24-17 over
South Florida.
USF.
Yes.
Yeah.
They,
oh, that's like a team.
For most of the game, Maryland, I kid you not, was turning the ball over every other possession. It was like a pattern.
Big Ten.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they lost four fumbles and two interceptions.
Good God.
Yeah.
They won?
they won. That is somewhat miraculous.
So in other news, USF has just been accepted to the Big Ten.
Well, footprint, baby. We need that state.
If you're wondering why USF maybe didn't capitalize, their quarterback, Stephen Bench, was 14 of 36 for 162 yards with a pick.
Yeah. He transferred from Penn State, you know.
He made the right call.
No, he didn't, because now he's on the field and everybody knows.
That's true. The backup quarterback, the least criticized position on every football team.
Better to
keep
your mouth
shut.
Yeah,
it was a pretty bad day. 2-11 against the spread, the Big Ten was. And the only two teams that covered were Penn State covered a 14-point line, winning 21-3. And Illinois, not only did they pull it out, they covered. They were laying 6 points, and they covered that spread by winning by eight.
I forgot one particularly notable score, which is Iowa needing 14 fourth quarter points to beat Ball State 17-13.
Gosh, that game. Oh, Iowa! Iowa missed like.
Didn't Iowa punt from like the 34 or something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that I'm surprised. Kirk Ferentz isn't playing Michigan, so he's always going to do that. You know what happened?
Iowa missed short field goals all day. They were losing 13-3. I mean, they looked dead in the water, Ace. I'm sure you were watching it. I was watching it. They looked dead in the water with 5 minutes to go in the game.
They did. I really thought that one was going to be over, and then their offense, I mean, they scored two touchdowns in the last 3 minutes, which is downright astounding for a Greg Davis outfit, let alone a Kirk Ferentz head coached Greg Davis outfit. But
that Kirk Ferentz pronunciation there was as wonky as my Taylor Lewan.
You know, that I get one, right?
Yeah. Ferentz. He's from Barcelona. I'm just rambling.
We're just going so we can talk about anything but that game.
That was a big result for Iowa. If they had lost that game, that would have been 3 years in a row where they had lost to a MAC game. They broke that
Big Ten.
They broke that streak. Yep, there we go. We're compiling a top three or a top five good things that happened with the Big Ten. That's it.
Wait, while
you're losing streak to a MAC, to the MAC conference.
Wait,
good job, Iowa.
While we're talking about this, we need to talk about the most Big Ten thing that happened this week, which was David Shaw punting from the USC 29.
Oh, my God. In a game they were... Oh, God. Just everything about that was so astonishingly bad. Like, your coach is Stanford. Know the numbers, man.
Or, have heard of a number.
Just anything that indicates that you're aware of football strategy.
Like, I think David Shaw's counting ability goes one too many. What down is it? Is it many or is it many? I don't know.
How do we tell the difference?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I mean, that game was such a Lloyd Carr special. Like, they were dominating that game, and it was still 10-10, and then they farted away and lose it.
There was so much about that because USC comes out in like this hurry up power run offense that just
so
destroys Stanford
for
one
drive. Yeah.
And then just they can't do it again. I don't know. And then they just slowed down. And then that game got really not that fun to watch for a long time.
It was a very Big Ten game. I was just getting progressively angrier and angrier at Stanford just because.
So Stanford, if you want to join, we'll happily kick out Purdue and take you in.
No, we need to keep Purdue.
They are the most Big Ten, really.
We're also going to be able to play them. And that'll be
nice once every like 6 years or whatever it is.
Do we have anything productive to say about, JT Barrett was a complete disaster.
I mean, this is the thing is that, I mean, I'm assuming none of us actually were able to really watch much of Michigan State, Oregon, or Virginia Tech.
I
was done with football three quarters of the way through the Michigan game, if not earlier.
Like permanently or?
We'll see.
Okay. You did show up for this, so.
I'm here. I'm present.
I'm impressed. JB, say something.
Well, which do you want to talk about, MSU or OSU?
I don't care. Just I don't care.
Well, the Michigan State game, you know, we talked about it earlier that it was actually still kind of an impressive result. They dominated the second quarter and into the third quarter, and then they had a couple three and outs. Oregon hit some big plays, and before you knew it, they went from up 9 to down 12. They held them scoreless for almost 20 minutes of game clock. Michigan State did against Oregon, and then 21 points in 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, they started the fourth quarter basically down 12. It was just, you know, a knockout punch, if you will. And it kind of came out of nowhere when it actually looked like Michigan State was taking control of the game.
Yeah, that's Oregon's MO, though.
Like, yeah, absolutely. That is.
They'll figure you out, and then once they do, yep. You're dead.
I mean, MSU went on a 27-7 run in this game, and then gave up the last four scores of the ball game.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even so, it's like given what happened in the rest of the league, that's
an impressive
top
showing.
Tier result.
But shutting out Oregon for a quarter is probably. Yeah. Actually, they didn't shut them out for a quarter. They got it, but a quarter's length of time. We'll give it to them. That worked.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But they, you know. They at least showed, I thought, some good things. You know, I mean, Cook threw some bad interceptions, but he also threw the ball well. You know, getting over to the Ohio State game, the Buckeyes just, wow. I mean, they gave up 6 sacks in the fourth quarter last night.
Yeah,
I don't
saw
know if
that.
You caught that.
That's, I mean, it's one thing to lose Braxton Miller, and obviously Barrett's going to have some issues as a freshman, but that offensive line is reminiscent of Michigan's offensive line last year. They're not even playing Chad Lindsey.
No, they are not.
He must be bad. He must be bad at football.
He might be bad.
Here's Barrett's, real quickly, his run chart, or his run, you know, run carry list from some point, like, you know, 10 minutes ago in the fourth quarter on. -6, -5, -8, -10, 22, which is a big scramble for a first down, but then -9, 3, and -9. Obviously, all those minuses were sacks.
Yeah, going up against Virginia Tech as a freshman in your second start is just the worst possible matchup.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they dialed up a corner blitz with Fuller. That nailed them. But then, you know, Daddy Nichols also just basically blew up their right guard, you know, for an easy sack. So it was a little bit, you know, a little bit of everything.
Can we hack into wherever Virginia Tech is cloning all these Fullers? Because I'd like one of those.
Yeah, Fullers are good.
Oh,
man.
Right, yeah.
I like a Fuller.
Yeah, it would be nice to have one.
I'd take even half of one.
Right.
Just like the torso. And we'll,
I don't
we'll
know where
that could be a problem in coverage.
But I would use them well.
Just kind of hurl it into the backfield. And
well, we do science to, like, make it a full one.
Yeah.
But like, I just need, like, the genesis of a Fuller, a seed, a Fuller seed.
We're getting into dangerous territory here.
What do you mean? Do you think that's against the laws of God and man? You don't? Then what's the problem?
The phrase Fuller seed, I think, is where I started seeing some problems.
Right. Well, fine. You're no fun. So, Jamie, this is what a podcast is like after a 31-0 loss after Notre Dame.
I think we've actually held it together pretty well compared to past miserable losses.
I think you guys have, yeah. I think you guys have.
Well, you didn't hear the whole beginning, Jamie, so
no, I know.
Jury's
I
out on
imagine.
The first
I mean, already,
half an hour of this podcast.
The things you guys are saying are probably things that are being said, or I know they're being said in my social circles down here, too. Everybody's just sort of...
So, what do we think the attendance for the Miami game is going to look like?
Oh, goosed up to 100,000.
Wow. No shows, baby. Do we keep track of those?
We do not.
The saving grace of the Michigan attendance record right there.
I wonder. I don't know, man. I wonder if there are going to be some chants. Like,
there might be some signs.
I don't know if those would get in.
That's true. They'll be diligent about those, I would expect.
You just need to, like, figure out what spells something positive and also spells fire Brandon. that's what you need to do. All right, Jamie, we're not going to get anything productive done here, so.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, I hear you. I've been bummed all day. I mean, it just, you know, what a terrible, you know, the worst series ends with Notre Dame, with Michigan playing its worst performance in the series and shut out for the first time since 84. I mean, just all of it. Just, ugh.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm ready to just maybe not watch football for a while, or maybe just watch some NFL today. Get outside and rake. Maybe rake.
You made it almost a day, Jamie. That's good. You don't need intervention at all. You don't need a football intervention. You're good.
Anyway.
I'm not an addict. I'm okay. Oh, all right. All right. Yeah. We'll talk to you next week unless...
You got it, guys. See you later.
In which case, we won't.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Anbinder along with Brian Cook, and I would just like to shout out Trauma Doc, who posted in the post-game recap of a game that we covered that we spoiled the outcome of the game for him on a Michigan blog that covers Michigan football, and we spoiled that game in particular. So congratulations, man. I don't even know what to say to you. That's astounding.
We should
well
invoice
done.
Him.
We should.